DM and the team. Gershon, if you can just reflect the agenda, please. But just on members, while that is happening, you have received the agenda, but just in terms of today's proceedings, we have at least 5 agenda items. The first, we'll be getting a briefing on the proposed amendments on the Land Court Bill. Secondly, we'll be dealing with the Legal Practice Act regulations. And if the Legal Practice Council members are present, let me also welcome them to this meeting, or I'm not sure if they're here or they'll join, but the GM will clarify that matter. We're also dealing with the, we want to deal with the repeal of the Transparent Penal Code Bill. And then there's 2 sets of minutes with regard to the committee. However, Honourable Members, I just think we should also bear in mind that we must try and finish this meeting at least by 11:45, so that it will allow members that need to connect with the transport to the plenary at 2 this afternoon, that they'll be able to do that. That being said, I would really see how far we can move with this agenda. And without wasting any time, I see the chair of the Legal Practice Council is present. Okay, welcome, chair. Without wasting any time on this, we're going to the first agenda item, which is the Land Court Bill. Members will recall that we received the department's response to public comments and deliberated on those on the 15th of March, 2023. And in our last meeting, we also deliberated on the tagging of the bill. There was also one outstanding issue with which the department also needed to clarify, and or the legal team needed to clarify with regard to clause 29 on the A list. And I would imagine that today in the presentation, the department will also address that matter. I think having been said that we do have time constraints in terms of this meeting, I'm going to request the department to take us through the proposed amendments. And our members, just in terms of today's proceedings, we would note the proposed amendments and we would probably enter into more in-depth deliberation in the next meeting. But obviously, if members have questions that they want to raise, they would be most welcome to do that. That being said, let me hand over then to yourself, Deputy Minister, to take us through.
Thanks, Chair. Look, the officials, it'll be Mr. Makulu Bete and Mr. Dupierre, I think, in particular, who will take you through it. What you would see, these are the proposed amendments. The bill was put out for public comment. The yellow ones are proposed amendments in response to the public comments. And then the other color, I think it's sort of light blue, turquoise, is amendments proposed by the department. Those were mainly made after engagement or engagements with the submission that the Land Claims Court judges made to the Portfolio Committee. I think if I can then hand over to the officials. Thanks very much.
Thanks, DM, we're in your hands.
And then just to indicate, sorry, how long have we got? An hour in total, or how long? I mean, for everything, including questions, just give us a time.
I think if you could present maybe for half an hour or 20 to 30 minutes, DM.
Okay. All right. I'm not sure who's going to be presenting, whether it's Mr. Makulu Bete or Mr. Dupria, but please stick to that time. Don't read everything. Highlight the amendments. Thanks very much.
Thanks, dear.
Thank you, DM, and good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. As discussed with my colleague, Mr. Dupree, I will be taking the committee through to the amendments. I hope everyone can hear me, if I can check with the chair about this.
Yes, I think you're very clear. Please continue.
Thank you very much. As the DM has indicated, Chair, we have the aspect highlighted in yellow and then others in turquoise. The ones in yellow will include all the comments that we have received that necessitated the amendments to the working document. And the turquoise highlights will be those that we have as the department identified when we were going through to the working document. Chair, I will try as best as I can to go through the most important and the salient features of the amendments that we have effected to the working document. With this one, Chair, I will want to park it for now. This deletion of concurrent, I will deal with it when I get to clause 7.1, because that is where I will be making a full explanation on this. For now, I would like to park it. Chair, we have made a few amendments. In part two of the bill, this is just to align by inserting the powers of court on hearing. This is to highlight or align with this clause 17, which deals with the powers of the court when dealing with or when hearing appeals. So it was missing there. We only had appeals. So just to comply or to align with clause 17, we have inserted that. Same case with this witness fees, Chair. It aligns with clause 20. Chair, through the engagement, we have agreed to insert this clause 37, the removal of actions or proceedings, which I'll. And obviously, this necessitated the changes to the numbering of the bill as highlighted in yellow here. Chair, going straight to clause 7, it is the clause that deals with the jurisdiction of the court. And initially, the bill had the word concurrent jurisdiction. And the chair will remember that we have reinstated the jurisdiction of the magistrate court in terms of which the land court will have jurisdiction in certain matters, and then the magistrate court will also have a jurisdiction to deal with certain matters, and in other instances there will be a concurrent jurisdiction between the court and the magistrate court. However, we have considered that it will be incorrect here to say concurrent jurisdiction in respect of all matters that in terms of this act or in terms of any other law are to be determined by the court or the magistrate court. Because if we say that, Chair, it will mean that in all matters, then the magistrate court and the land court will have concurrent jurisdiction, but that is not the case. As I've just alluded, the land court will have jurisdiction in certain matters. The magistrate court and the land court will have a concurrent jurisdiction in all matters. So in other matters, that is. So we are deleting this to remove that that incorrect. We are likely to give incorrect assumption that the magistrate court will also have matters in all, will have jurisdiction in all matters that are contemplated in terms of the plan. So we are deleting that for that main reason. And we also included here or the magistrate court so as to indicate that there are those distinctions in terms of the jurisdiction of the land court and the magistrate court. Chair, we have received comments to the effect that this clause, the subclause 3, was misleading when we refer to each court. And our submission and our response to that comment was that we are not establishing the divisions of the court or satellite courts as it was submitted in the submissions. However, we have considered that if then there was a confusion to that effect, it will be better that we delete the word each here and here, so that it refers to the court, because we only have one land court, although which can sit in various areas.
Mr. Makulubete, sorry, you'll have to go faster. You're not going to cover it in half an hour.
I will try my best. Thank you, GM. Let me try to do that.
And Mr. Makulubete, also bear in mind that we did also go through some of the issues when you presented with regard to the department's responses on that. So just bear that in mind, because we have been through one process already. Thanks.
That's much appreciated. That makes my life much easier. Thank you, Chair. In terms of clause 8, dealing with the appointment of judges, we have inserted this clause, Chair, to deal with the instances where the persons who are to be appointed to the judge to the bench of the land court, who were not already judges of the court, they do not enjoy the automatically they do not automatically hold concurrent appointment. Instead, when those judges or those persons are to be appointed, they will hold a single appointment. However, the Judicial Commission is entitled and empowered to advise the president as to whether the particular person needs to hold concurrent appointment or single appointment. That is concurrent appointment to the Land Court and the High Court. Chair, this is just a technical amendment to align with the Constitution. Chair, this clause 12 deals with the appointment of assessors. There was an issue that was raised as to the relating to the clarification of this clause, and particularly with regards to the skills that are required, and the suggestion was that this should be included in the bill itself instead of the regulations as we have previously providing in the bill. So to align with the submissions that we have received, we have now provided for the presiding judge to be the one who appoints the assessor, and the assessor will be a person who has skills, experience, and knowledge relevant to the work of the court, and those persons are not required to have specific legal qualifications. In addition, Chair, we have we received a comment to amplify this, and we have now made a provision that the minister will determine the remuneration of the assessors in consultation with the members, with the cabinet member responsible for finance. Chair, we have received the comment that this is not clear, and then we have tried to clarify it. Instead, what we have suggested to do was to give the rules board an outright and a direct power to make rules to regulate the conduct of the proceedings of the court, and then those rules will include these aspects. There's about six aspects. Among those aspects, what was suggested was the inclusion of the requirement that the rules board must make rules for the applications in terms of Chapter 3, Capital A of the Restitution Act, and also those powers that are listed in the Rules Board Act that gives the Rules Board various powers when it makes the rules of courts. There was also a suggestion, Chair, that we include this clause. As you can see, this previous clause has been retained, except that we broke it down so as to accommodate this clause that it requires the court to be able to revert the claim or refer the claim back to the commission with direction as to what matters the commission must investigate and give a report on. This is just a technical correction. Chair, this clause is essentially what we deleted here, because the commentators were saying that there is a confusion, and then we tried to clarify that by giving the rules board the outright powers to make the rules, and also to make sure that if there are gaps in those rules and also in this act, then the Superior Courts Act will be applicable, as well as the so-called uniform rules, that is the rules that are applicable in the High Courts. However, the bottom line is that the rules board is going to make the rules for the court. If there are those gaps or those rules that are not included in the rules made for the court, then the High Court rules or the uniform rules will be applicable. The judiciary were of the view that this needs to be clarified, as there are some issues that emanate in practice relating to the incidental to an issue, and it was suggested that we reverse that and replace it with the expression sufficiently connected to a matter. Chair, there was a further suggestion that we should expand this, so as to include this portion of the draft, so as to make sure that the orders of the court can be able to give orders and direction relating to the procedure that must be followed during the trial of the matter. So we have just inserted that as paragraph A of the clause. Chair, this is a straightforward a proposal that was made so as to make sure that there is no confusion as to the status of the direction of the ruling made by the court. Chair, in your introduction, you requested that we give a clarification on a portion that was not incorporated in the bill, following what was contained in a list that was submitted. Chair, I did indicate in the meeting, that is the last meeting, that it was an error on our side, for which we still do apologize for, because we omitted to include this part, and on application of any affected party, or in cases falling under paragraph B, acting of its own accord. So there was an omission. This portion of the A list didn't make its way to the B list. However, we have included it so as to make sure that all that was in the A list is contained in the bill. However, following the suggestion that we have received, Chair, we are deleting this clause in its entirety, because there was a submission that it is too restrictive and it needed to be expanded. Now, we are expanding it through this new clause, Chair, the salient features of it being that any person affected by the judgment is able to apply for the rescission, instead of any party, as we previously had in the bill. So any person who may be affected by the judgment of the court may be able to bring an application for rescission of judgment. And the other insertion, Chair, to expand the provision was to insert this provision to say that the court can be able to rescind the judgment which was void from inception or was obtained by fraud or mistake common to the parties. And also, can rescind the judgment where no appeal lies. Those are the measures that we have taken, Chair, to expand the clause as it was suggested by comments that we have received. Mm-hmm. Chair, this is a technical amendment that we have effected so as to make sure that this section or clause will become a standalone clause. I will deal with it later. However, this necessitates the renumbering of the clauses as indicated in this turquoise highlight. Now, that very clause is contained here, Chair, being a provision that will deal with the judgment or orders of other courts. The previous clause deals with the judgments or the appeals of judgment of the land court. And this one deals with those of other courts. Then particularly the magistrate forward chair to require the rules that will be made by the rules board to make provision for the manner in which the appeals will be lodged with the court and the processes that will be followed in prosecuting those appeals in the court. Chair, I did indicate that we have this new clause in terms of which there was a suggestion that the matter should be able to be removed from one sitting of the court to the other. This is what we have come up with to the effect that a matter can be removed from, let's say it was instituted in the sitting in the main seat of the court. It can be removed from the main seat to and then transferred to another sitting of the court, but it should be within the same province. That is, from the main seat in the same province to the other seat of the court, of the land court in the same province. In addition, Chair, we have also made a provision for the removal of the matter from the court to the high court and vice versa. This was as a result of the experience of the judges of the land claims court who were of the view that the parties should not be deprived of the power to proceed with their cases just because they chose the wrong forum. Instead of dismissing the action, the matter can just be removed and then be proceeded with in the correct forum. This is just an implication of
Mr. Mukulubeti. Gashan, is he still on the platform?
Hi, Chair, I'm just checking. It appears he is definitely having problems, Jay. I'll just follow up with the department.
I think there's something on the screen now.
Chair, my apologies. I seem to have been disconnected. Can you still hear me?
Yes, we can. Please continue.
Yes, Chair, I don't know from where I got cut off.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, Chair, well, this was just to provide for the removal of a matter from one land court, or from the seat of the court to another within the same province, and also to provide for the removal of the matter from the court to the high court, and vice versa. Chair, furthermore, in terms of this proposal, it was proposed that the current staff of the land claims court should continue to be the staff of the land court as soon as it is established. This is a transitional measure to make sure that the staff that are currently working in the land claims court continue to work as such, but in the land court. This is to avoid having to appoint the new staff and officers of the land court when it comes into operation. Chair, just this last two was to provide for the mediators and assessors to be appointed in terms of the Restitution Act when the until the rules that are supposed to be made in terms of Section 29(3) and the regulations in terms of 37(1)(d) have been made. So once the Act comes into operation, and if there's no rules and the regulations, then the mediators and assessors will be appointed in terms of the current dispensation under the Restitution of Land Rights Act. Chair, we know that the current Land Claims Court is being run through the rules that have been made by the Judge President. It was a submission that those rules should continue to operate with necessary changes until the Rules Board has made the rules as contemplated in Section 14(1). Chair, obviously, in light of the new insertions, we have renumbered the clauses of the bill. And the Chair, I'm closer to finalizing my presentation. Chair, this is a new, obviously this is a technical thing to remove 2022 to 2023. However, of importance is to make an amendment. This is the upgrading of Land Rights Act, in terms of which we are amending, because this clause 24F provides for the magistrate or a judge. Now, we want to confine it to a judge of the land court, so that when an application for a warrant is requested or required, then the application can be made to a magistrate or a judge specifically of the land court. This is the same situation, Chair, in relation to the approaching the judge of the land court instead of any judge of the high court. Chair, this is also a technical amendment so as to remove clause 35, because now what is going to be applicable is Section 26(3) of the land court, because it is the incorporation of what is contained in the current Section 35 of the Act. The same situation is applicable here, Chair. This is a technical aspect to remove 3 and then refer to Roman Figure 3, as being the chapters referred to in the Restitution Act. This is also a technical one to make sure that we do not delete the entire Section 13, but only
Mr. Mukulubete, I think just go to PI. That is the main amendment, yes, coming up in this section.
Thank you. I will just go directly to that. Because, Chair, in terms of the engagements that we have had and also the experience of the judges of the Land Claims Court, they were of the view that, because currently the matters that are emanating from the PI Act are being dealt with in the various divisions of the High Court, and also the various all the magistrate courts are able to deal with the PI Act. As a result, it was submitted that there will be an influx of PI matters if we give the land court the jurisdiction to deal with the PI matters. Our initial stance was to give it the land court and the magistrate concurrent jurisdiction to deal with PI matters. However, it was still the submission that there are many cases that are going to flow from PI Act, and as a result, it will be better that we reinstate the High Court to have the power to still deal with the PI matters. However, instead of giving all the three courts, that is Mesh Court, the Land Court, and the High Court, the jurisdiction to deal with the PI matters, we decided to delete the entire PI Act from becoming under the jurisdiction of the Land Court and revert it back to the High Court and the Magistrate Court. That is why, Chair, you will see we have deleted the entire part dealing with the PI Act, so as to make sure. If I may just go back a step back to say that you recall that as a department, we decided we were of the view that we do not want to overburden the land court with all matters at once as it comes into operation. Instead, we are going to have an approach in terms of which various pieces of legislation are in due course going to be placed under the jurisdiction of the court. And when that time comes, and when the situation or the environment has stabilized for us to be able to include the PI Act under the jurisdiction of the land court, then we can be able to do that as much as is the case in relation to the inclusion of other pieces of legislation under the jurisdiction of the land court. Chair, this brings me to the conclusion of my briefing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mokulubete and DM, for that presentation.
Yeah, Chair, just quickly to wrap up, I said I think that the ones that the judges of the Land Claims Court wanted were in turquoise. There, most of them are in yellow because it was part of their submission. So the things like the transfer of cases, some of the transitional arrangements come from them. Just to be open, that the one issue that there was not agreement between them and the ministry and the department on was over this issue of concurrent appointments. They had wanted all judges to be concurrently members of the Land Court and the High Court. What we've got under, I think it's 3B, is what we think, that's 8.3B, what we think takes care of it, where effectively, I mean, we did want the Land Court to be a standalone court like the Labour Court. So 8.3B is basically leaves it effectively up to the Judicial Services Commission to decide whether it should be concurrent appointment or single appointment. The existing Land Claims Court judges in the transitional arrangements have the right to choose or have the right to continue with concurrent appointments. So just to highlight that, so my understanding is that the Land Claims Court judges are happy with the bill currently, except there's still the dispute. They would rather see automatic concurrent appointment, but we feel that 8.3B accommodates their concerns. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, DM. Our members, as you can see, the department is proposing various amendments, including those that were proposed by commentators for submission from the poll. And there are obviously various consequential amendments. And the amendments largely cover various clauses in the poll, as well as amendments to the schedule. On members, as I've indicated when we started this agenda item, that obviously we would deliberate further in a subsequent meeting, but if members have any like questions that they would like to ask with regard to this presentation, you can please give me an indication. If not, on members, I don't see any hands. We will then ask the department, together with the Parliamentary Legal Services, to go ahead and draft the proposed amendments so that we can then consider and deliberate in our next meeting. Thank you very much, GM and Mrs. Mokulubete. I think our members will then move to the
Chair, sorry, just they have been drafted, those amendments. They are in this text. Those are the drafts.
Okay.
Unless you want them taken out as a...
Yeah, normally we would take it out on a separate...
Oh, okay. All right. Fine. Sure.
But yeah, I mean, it's just stuck. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, all members. We'll then move on to the next agenda item, which is with regard to the Legal Practice Act regulation. We'll once again receive a briefing by the department on these regulations. There are two sets. The one is the regulations for approval in terms of Section 94, Subsection 1 of the Legal Practice Act, and the other is in terms of Section 94, Subsection 3 of the Legal Practice Act 2014. And in terms of Section 94, Subsection 3, of these regulations, these must be approved by Parliament. And that's why we're dealing with this matter today, honourable members. Let me take the opportunity to once again give the department to make this presentation, and thereafter, honourable members, we can engage the presentation. Over to you once again. I'm not sure who's doing this presentation.
Madam Chair, that would be Ms. Fatima Bayat. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Ms. Bayat?
Yes, good morning, Chair, and good morning, honourable members. I'm Fatima Bayat, and I'm a state law advisor in the Chief Directorate Legislative Development in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. I am meeting with you today in order to make presentations on two sets of regulations that have been prepared in terms of the Legal Practice Act and to seek Parliament's approval of the two sets of regulations. The first set of regulations deals with regulations that are proposed for purposes of community service. The second set of regulations deals with the amendment to Regulation 2 of the regulations that were made in terms of the Legal Practice Act and which regulations provide for the procedure in electing members of the Legal Practice Council. Detailed slide presentations and copies of the regulations were made available for circulation amongst the honourable members for purposes of today's briefing. Also present at today's briefing are members of the Legal Practice Council, who will assist in answering any questions that the honourable members may have after the presentations have been made. I will commence with the presentation on the regulations relating to community service. As an introduction, the majority of the sections of the Legal Practice Act came into operation with effect from 31 October 2018 and on 1 November 2018 respectively. The Legal Practice Council was established. The first regulations in terms of the Act were published by the Government Notice Number R921 of 31 August 2018. No regulations have been made as yet regarding our community service. Next slide. On the issue of enabling provisions, Section 94.1J of the Act provides for regulations regarding the rendering of community service as contemplated in Section 29.1. Section 29.1 provides that the Minister must, after consultation with the Council, prescribe the requirements for community service. Prescribed is defined in Section 1 of the Act as prescribed by regulation. Section 29.1A and B of the Act provides that community service as a component of practical vocational training by candidate legal practitioners may be required, or that a minimum period of recurring community service by practitioners upon which continued enrollment as a legal practitioner is dependent may be required. Section 29.2 of the Act lists some of the possible places where community service can be rendered. Section 29.3 provides that the Council may exempt a candidate legal practitioner or legal practitioner from rendering community service as set out in the rules made by the Council in terms of Section 95.1S of the Act. Any regulations made must, before publication thereof in the Gazette, be tabled in Parliament by the Minister for approval. Next slide. On the issue of consultation, in April 2022, the Minister approved that consultation with role players and interested parties may take place. The most common comments received are discussed below. The Council provided comments dated 20 June 2022 and 30 August 2022, which were incorporated in the draft regulations. Proposals were made that pro bono or community service should be defined in relation to the client's financial means as well as public interest in a case. The department's view is that such a provision would lead to a too restrictive community service environment. There were requests that the following be recognized as community service by a service legal practitioner: informa pauperis instructions from the registrar, time spent on providing supervision to a candidate legal practitioner of his, her own of his or her rendering of community service and training to candidate legal practitioners. The draft regulations were amended to include this, as all of the above will be to the advantage of the community. Next slide. The South African Law Reform Commission has proposed amendments to Section 29 of the Act, and these appear to have the support of many attorneys. The proposed amendments provide that service at a Chapter 9 institution, service at community advice office, and service on a pro bono basis be included as forms of community service. Some commentators indicated that the amendments to the Act should first be finalized before the regulations be proceeded with. The department does not agree and is of the view that the proposed amendments do not impact on proceedings with the regulations. The listed options may still be added later on. Some commentators proposed that the regulations should prescribe the form of the certificate of proof of community service rendered. The department agrees, and forms for certificates were prescribed as new schedules to the draft regulations. Next slide. It was stated that the draft regulations are not clear on the process to be followed by a candidate legal practitioner or legal practitioner who wishes to rely on excess community service rendered in the previous year. A reference to this aspect was consequently inserted in the prescribed forms in the new set schedules. Several commentators raised a concern regarding the consequence for a candidate or practitioner for non-compliance, as the draft regulations are not clear how this is to be dealt with. It was proposed that a failure should not immediately be tainted by misconduct, and a graduated system should be used. The department is of the view that the provisions of regulations 4A8 and 4B10 draft regulations are sufficient to address this, as it provides that professional standards, as provided for in the code of conduct and the rules, will be applicable, and non-compliance with the provision of this regulation must be dealt with by the council in accordance with the rules. Next slide. It was pointed out that a practitioner may enter into a contingency fee agreement and may ultimately be remunerated for pro bono time spent, and might result in the community service hours for that year being too few. A reference to this aspect was inserted in the newly prescribed certificates. It was proposed that the payment of annual fees and the submission of a community service certificate should be separate. The draft regulations were amended to address this. It was also proposed that the supervision of a candidate attorney's community service need not be limited to his or her principal. The draft regulations were amended to address this. Next slide. It was proposed that a candidate attorney should also be able to comply with his or her obligations by carrying out pro bono services, as contemplated by Regulation 4B5, where admitted practitioners are concerned, provided these services are supervised by the candidate attorney's principal and or the admitted attorney to whom the candidate attorney ordinarily reports. The draft regulations were amended to include this. An important issue that was raised by several commentators is the question on what is the process to be followed by the minister to approve service in the state or other service as provided for by Section 29(2)(a) and E of the Act. It is pointed out, rightly so, that a cumbersome process that would cause delays could hamper the community service initiative. It is recommended that this aspect be attended to timelessly, so that the process can be in place as well as communicated to the profession when the regulations commence. This matter was referred to the Office of the Solicitor General, who indicated that they will deal with this matter. There are internal engagements to address this. Next slide. Several proposals were received that pro bono work and community service must be defined. The distinction between pro bono work and community service is not clear, and pro bono work should be seen as acceptable community service. Practitioners currently render voluntary pro bono services, and there is a need for certainty in the different meanings. The department agrees with this proposal and adapted the draft regulations accordingly. Several commentators opine that attention should be given to capacitate existing structures such as Legal Aid South Africa, public defenders, etc., which would then make the rendering of community service unnecessary. The department's response is that Section 29 of the Act is preemptory in this regard. Next slide. It was proposed that the regulations must include a non-closed list of state organs or agencies that are envisaged in Section 29(2)(a) of the Act that have been approved or pre-approved by the minister. The department is of the opinion that to include a list of approved bodies is unnecessary, as it would require frequent amendments to the regulations. Section 29(2)(e) does not require the approval to be by regulation, but provides that a list can be determined administratively, which will allow for flexibility and accessibility. Legal Aid South Africa is not in support of community service that is rendered as part of practical vocational training due to the requirement for continuous supervision, which is not possible if such candidate legal practitioner is placed in the service of an institution. The view is noted. However, Section 29(1)(a) of the Act is clear in this regard. Next slide. Some commentators refer to the legal sector code that will be issued by the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition in terms of Section 9(1) of the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act of number 53 of 2003. The legal sector code that will come into effect on the date of publication thereof, and there were concerns as to how the provisions thereof will align with the community service regulations. Paragraph 6 of the legal sector code provides for the business case and imperatives. Paragraph 6.5.7 provides as follows. Quote, at all relevant and material times, the implementation of the legal sector code should be underpinned by the following objectives. Implementing measures to address the provision and availability of pro bono services and community-based legal services, thus ensuring access to affordable legal services for all people in South Africa, particularly marginalized, poor, and rural communities, unquote. Next slide. Paragraph 33 provides for the means, the socioeconomic development scorecard for attorneys and advocates. Targets for pro bono services range from 24 hours to 100 hours per annum, depending on the monetary threshold. Provision is made for legal practitioners who wish to invest monetary contributions instead of pro bono hours. On page 98, it is provided that the Legal Sector Code, Charter Council, to be established by the Minister of Justice to oversee and implement the Legal Sector Code, may amend the pro bono hours having regard to any regulations relating to community service that may be promulgated in terms of the Act, unquote. Seeing that the Legal Sector Code has not been finalized yet and it is unclear when it will be published, it is the department's view that it should not be taken into account for purposes of this regulations.
Ms. Bayat?
Next slide.
Ms. Bayat, my apologies. I don't know if it's just my screen or with all members, but I see the presentation is not up. I'm not sure who's controlling the slide.
It's Gershwin, Chair.
Gershwin, okay. Okay, he probably was kicked out of the platform. Gershwin, are you back on?
Hi, apologies, Chair and members. I'm just going to pick up the presentation again.
Okay. Are you on slide number, Ms. Bayat?
I'm on slide number 13.
Okay, thanks.
As I headed proposed draft regulations. Chair, I noticed that the presentation that is up is not the one on community service.
It was the earlier one. Gershon, the,
the latest second one, yes.
Apologies, Chair. Let me just get this. And if you could just direct me to the slide, please, Chair.
Slide number 13. Chair, may I continue?
Yeah, please continue, ma'am.
Thank you. On the proposed draft regulations, Regulation 1 of the draft regulations defines the regulations. Regulation 2 of the draft regulations inserts references to the new regulations and new certificates in the classification of the regulations. Regulation 3 of the draft regulations inserts new regulations 4A and 4B. Regulation 4A provides for the rendering of community service by candidate legal practitioners. Regulation 4A, 1A and B define community service and pro bono services. Regulation 4A2 provides that candidate legal practitioners must render 8 hours per annum community service. The service will have to be rendered at the institutions referred to in section 29(2) of the Act or at the institutions as approved by the Minister. The next slide.
Okay, I see he's on the platform. Gershon?
Yes, Jane. Is that the correct slide?
Yes, it is. Are you able to put it in presentation mode and also go to the next slide, please?
Okay, I'm having some technical difficulties. It shows presentation on my screen.
Okay, unless your network's not too great. But, well, members, we do have the presentation as well that we've received. Honorable Member Smith.
Thank you, Chase. I don't know if I can quickly ask a question about a certain regulation. Or must I wait until the end of the presentation?
Is this because you'll be leaving us at 11:15?
Yes, ma'am.
Can I request that you perhaps get your colleagues to do the question at the end, please?
Okay, let me hold on. I'm going to try and stay as long as I can.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, ma'am.
Ms. Bayat, please continue. Ms. Bayer?
Yes, Chair. We are now slide 14. As section 29(2)(a) and (e) of the Act provides that the Minister may administratively approve where community service may be rendered, it is not advisable to specifically list the places in the regulations, as changing circumstances would require a lengthy and costly amendment thereof. Regulation 483 provides for pro rata service if service as a candidate legal practitioner commences during the course of a calendar year. Regulation 484 provides that the period of community service may be intermittent or continuous. Regulation 4A5 provides that extra hours of community service rendered may be carried forward as credits for the next calendar year. Regulation 4A6 provides that pro bono services rendered will be recognized as community service. Next slide. Regulation 4A7 provides that the service rendered must be supervised by the principals or engaging advocates. Regulation 4A8 provides that professional standards as provided for in the Code of Conduct and the Legal Practice Council's rules will apply. Regulation 4A9 provides that candidate legal practitioners must, after completion of the period of practical vocational training, submit to the Legal Practice Council one or more certificates signed by their principals or engaging advocates as confirmation that community service has been rendered. The form of the certificate is prescribed as Annex C to the regulations. Regulation 4B provides for the rendering of community service by legal practitioners. Regulation 4B, 1A and B define community service and pro bono services. Next slide. Regulation 4B2 provides that practicing legal practitioners must render 40 hours per annum community service. The service must be rendered at the institutions referred to in Section 29(2) of the Act or at the institutions. Regulation 4B3 provides for pro rata service of 3 hours per month if service as a practitioner commences during the course of the year. Regulation 4B4 provides that service may be intermittent or continuous. Regulation 4B5 provides that extra hours of community service rendered in any year may be carried forward as credits for the next year. Regulation 4B6 provides that pro bono services rendered will be recognized as community service. Next slide. Regulation 4B7, 8, and 9 provide that the following will be regarded as community service. Informa pauperis instructions from the Registrar of a Division of the High Court. Time spent on providing supervision to a candidate legal practitioner who is rendering community service. And any lectures or training presented to candidate legal practitioners by legal practitioners at no charge and with no remuneration. Regulation 4B10 provides that professional standards as provided for in the Code of Conduct and the Legal Practice Council's rules will apply. Regulation 4B11 provides that practicing legal practitioners must submit to the Legal Practice Council annually when making payments for annual subscriptions, one or more certificates signed by the recipients of the community service as confirmation of services rendered. The form of the certificate is prescribed as Annex D to the regulations. Next slide. The regulations were checked by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, who proposed technical amendments that were effected. The Presidency, Policy and Research exempted the Department from conducting a socio-economic impact assessment on the amended regulations. Chair, that concludes the presentation on community service.
Okay, thanks, Ms. Bayat. I wanted to teach you both, but let me, Honourable Members, I know Honourable Smith has some time limitations, and I want to assume his question is in relation to the community service regulations that has been presented. I initially thought we could just get both presentations, and then the other one is on the electronic voting electronic elections for the LPC. I was hoping to get both presentations, which would actually make this meeting run more efficiently. So Arnold Smith,
Continue, it's fine. Don't let me disturb.
Okay, great. All right. Thank you very much. Ms. Bayat, if you could take us to the next presentation as well, the next regulation. Okay, Shwin.
Next slide. Thank you. The majority of the sections of the Legal Practice Act came into operation with effect from 31 October 2018 and then 1 November 2018, respectively. The Legal Practice Council was established. The first regulations in terms of the Act were published by Government Notice Number R91 of 31 August 2018. Next slide. On the enabling provisions in the Act, Section 7 of the Act provides for the composition of the Legal Practice Council. Section 71A provides that the Council inter alia consists of 16 legal practitioners elected in accordance with the procedure prescribed by the Minister. Prescribed is defined in Section 1 of the Act as prescribed by regulation. Section 94.1c of the Act provides that the Minister must make regulations relating to inter alia a procedure for the election of legal practitioners to the Council as contemplated in Section 71a. Any regulation made must, before publication thereof in the Gazette, be tabled in Parliament by the Minister for approval. Next slide. Current Regulation 2 of the regulations provides for the election procedure referred to in Section 71A of the Act. The process prescribed by Regulation 2 is currently only paper-based. Regulation 2 was drafted in a limited time frame and was focused on the first election that was held in 2018. Next slide. Regarding the proposed amendments, the Council requested amendments to Regulation 2. Amendment regulations were tabled in 2021, but subsequently withdrawn for technical reasons. The proposed amendments will ensure a smooth, continuous transition from an existing council to another without an overlap in administrative functions, confusion, and duplication of elected members. Provision is also made for the option of electronic voting. The proposed amendments do not change the structure of policy of Regulation 2. Next slide. Regarding the proposed amendments, Regulation 1 of the amendment regulations defines regulations. Regulation 2 of the draft regulations amends Regulation 2 of the current regulations. Regulation 2A and B of the draft regulations delete references to the first election in Regulation 2, 2 and 3 of the regulations, as this took place in 2018 and therefore references thereto become obsolete. Regulation 2C of the draft regulations amends Regulation 2, 4 of the regulations. References to the first election in Regulation 2, 4 of the regulations are deleted. Next slide. The proposed new wording of Regulation 2, 4, A and B of the regulations clarify when elections must be held and also when a member's term commences and ends. Elections are held every third year in accordance with Section 10 of the Act that provides that a member holds office for 3 years. A member's term commences on the date of announcement and terminates upon announcement of the next election's results. There may not be an overlap of terms. The proposed new wording of Regulation 24C of the regulations provides that paper ballots and electronic voting can be used. The Council will publish guidelines and, in terms of paragraph D, must appoint an independent electoral service provider. The next slide. The proposed new wording of Regulation 24E of the regulations provides for when notices requesting nominations must be dispatched by the council, namely between 60 and 90 days prior to the third anniversary of the date of the announcement of the results of the immediately preceding election. In terms of the proposed new Regulation 24F of the regulations, if a vacancy becomes available, the candidate who is in the immediately preceding election receives the most votes, following the votes received by a member who received the least votes and who falls within the same categories as set out in Annexes A and B to the regulations, as the departing member must be appointed to fill the vacancy. Annexes A and B to the regulations prescribe the ballot papers for attorneys and advocates, respectively. Next slide. The categories referred to are the number of black women, black men, white women and white men, respectively, that can serve as members in order to comply with the representativity provisions of Section 72A of the Act. In terms of the proposed new Regulation 24G, if such a person is not available, the candidate in the immediately preceding election must be appointed. In terms of the proposed new Regulation 24H of the regulations, if no person referred to in paragraphs F and G is available, OG, the council must conduct a by-election. The proposed new Regulation 24I of the regulations provides that the term of the person that fills the casual vacancy must terminate on the date on which the office of the replaced member would have terminated. Next slide. The proposed new Regulation 24J of the regulations provides that information must be included in the guidelines by the council. Regulation 2D of the draft regulations deletes references to the first election in Regulation 25B of the regulations. Regulation 2E of the draft regulations amends Regulation 211 of the regulations to refine the voting process and to include electronic voting. The wording of the new sub-regulation 11 is adapted to include the electronic voting option, and no big changes to this process are made. Regulation 2F of the draft regulations amends Regulation 212 of the regulations to correct cross-references consequent to the amendment to Regulation 211. Next slide. Regulation 2G of the draft regulations amends Regulation 215 that provides for when the voting papers must be opened to include a reference to the paper ballots, as the new Regulation 225AA will provide for this relating to electronic ballots. Regulation 2G, H, I, J, K, and L of the draft regulations provides in sub-regulations 16, 17, 19, 20, and 21 for the situation where the chairperson has been nominated for election, in which case the executive officer of the council will perform the chairperson's duties in respect of the election processes. Next slide. Regulation 2A of the draft regulations inserts a new regulation 225 capital letter A in the regulations to provide for the process applicable to the electronic ballots. The process is similar to that of voting by paper ballot. In terms of regulation 225AA, the chairperson and referee must examine electronic documents, verify them, and regard them as void if applicable. In terms of paragraph B, the referee's views prevails in the case of disagreement. The referee must record and endorse invalid forms in terms of paragraph C. In terms of regulation 225AD, the chairperson and referee must note the voter's information in a voting register. The chairperson must, in terms of paragraph E, securely retain the electronic documents in the presence of the referee. Next slide. The documents must be retained for 3 months, as are the paper ballots. In terms of Regulation 225AF, the independent electoral service provider must count the votes recorded in the electronic voting system and record the results in the presence of the scrutineers and the referee, whereafter the chairperson must securely retain or save it. Regulation 2P of the draft regulation amends Regulations 229 that provides for the reporting of the result by the scrutineers to include references to electronic voting and paper ballots. Regulation 2Q of the draft regulations amends Regulation 232 of the regulations to provide how practitioners must be notified of the election results. Next slide. Regulation 2R of the draft regulations amends Regulation 235 of the regulations to correct a cross-reference consequent to the amendment to Regulation 211. Regulations 3 and 4 of the draft regulations delete references to the first election in the ballot papers as contained in Annexes A and B to the regulations. Regulation 5 of the amendment regulations provides that the regulations will come into operation on the date of publication thereof in the Gazette. Next slide. Comment was invited by email from the following stakeholders on 30 April 2021. The Black Lawyers Association, the National Association of Democratic Lawyers, the Law Societies of South Africa, the Pan-African Bar Association, the General Council of the Bar, the National Bar Council, the National Forum of Advocates and Legal Aid South Africa. An invitation to comment was placed on the department's website on 30 April 2021. No comments were received. Next slide. The Presidency on Policy and Research exempted the department from conducting a socioeconomic impact assessment on the amendment regulation. Chair, that concludes the presentation on the elections process.
Thank you very much, Ms. Byers. Perhaps the chair of the RPC, if you have anything you would want to say before members engage in the presentation.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. I'd just like to say that I am online this morning with two of our executive members, Advocate Brenton Josephs, SC, and Busani Mabunda, our Executive Officer, Ms. Nzuza, and two of our managers, Ms. Cook and Ms. Murray. We'd just like to say that we thank you for the opportunity and that we want to thank the Department for taking our comments into consideration, and we support the regulations as is in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madrid, and welcome to the rest of your team. Honourable members, this is the presentation on the two sets of regulations. Obviously, the first one dealing with the rendering of community services for candidates, legal practitioners. And this matter also addresses matters related to access to justice. And the second set of regulations dealing with electronic elections of the legal practitioners, the LPC. Members, are there any questions or comments that you have with regard to the two presentations? If you can give me an indication by the raise your hand function. Okay. Members? Honourable Member, Honourable Maleka? Is Honourable Seth on the platform? If I may just verify first, because I think he's not there. Okay. All right. Anyway, he can always ask this in a future engagement. All right. Honourable Maleka?
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me click. Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members, the officials and the deputy minister and the department, and welcome the presentation. Chairperson, I want to check, is there any information on the types of community service that may be provided through service in the state? I'm raising the questions on the Legal Practice Act regulation. And is the minimum standard of at least 8 hours of community service per year for candidate legal practitioners sufficient for them to make a meaningful contribution or to make it a meaningful learning experience? Chairperson, and my last two questions, how will the Legal Practice Council ensure that the supervision of those performing community service actually of an adequate standard and or diligently performed? My last one, can the department please give the committee more information on the process for electronic voting and whether all the relevant systems are in place to ensure a smooth electoral voting process? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Maleka. Any other honourable member? Okay, if not, perhaps I could just maybe raise some issues as well. Perhaps with regard to the fact that the regulations provide that time spent on providing supervision to a candidate legal practitioner who is rendering community services is attributable to the legal practitioner's period of community service. So does this provision really correlate with the ethos of community service, which is to provide free legal services, either in service of the state in some capacity or for those in need as set out in the Act? Secondly, does the LPC have the monitoring capacity to ensure the application of professional standards is provided for in the code of conduct and the rules to community services rendered by legal by a legal practitioner? And thirdly, will enrollment as a legal practitioner be dependent on practicing legal practitioners fulfilling the minimum period of recurring community services? And finally, you know, with regard to the issue of access to community services in rural areas. Perhaps how these communities have access to the service, and especially close to where they reside. I think those are just some of my questions. I still don't see any other member who wants to engage, but perhaps then let me hand over to yourself, Ms. Bayat, to take us through the responses. And I'm not sure if you're going to get assistance from the LPC as well. Ms. Baird?
Yes, Chair. Your questions have been noted. I think the Legal Practice Council is best suited to provide responses on the questions.
All right. Ms. Mather, over to you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Baird, for that. The issue of the 8 hours, currently, candidate legal practitioners do not have to perform any pro bono services or community services. So we believe that that is sufficient for them while they are doing their practical training. The how we will monitor it at the LPC will be based by the certificates we get. Believe that it serves the way it is structured currently, or the suggested regulations would mean that it would be more access to justice for society as a whole. People would be able to access justice or services right at each where there is an office of a legal practitioner. And the monitoring capacity, I would like to leave over to our executive officer, which would be able to respond to that more fully. And if there's any of our LPC members that would also like to add for something that I haven't addressed, please feel free to comment, if I may, through you, Madam Chair.
Please continue.
If I could just ask our executive officer, Ms. Nzuza, to comment on the monitoring capacity, because that would be an operational matter which she would lead. Is she still online?
He's still online.
Ms. Nzuza, would you be able to comment on the monitoring capacity or any of the officials, the LPC that's online? I can see we're not getting a response. Apologies, Madam Chair. It would be an operational matter that we would have to, seeing as we haven't done it since the LPC has come into existence, but we would place monitoring systems in place, or put in place monitoring systems so that we can evaluate, especially you would note that once a person pays their membership or their subscription fees, that their certificate needs to be added as well as when a legal practitioner or a candidate legal practitioner is to be admitted, their certificate is to be attached. So that would be one of the ways that it would be monitored. We would be, all practitioners are bound by our code of conduct and the LPA with the service or the level of service commitment that they do provide. I must stress that since the LPA came into operation, we have regressively had no regulations that enforced community service or pro bono services. So it has been difficult for the LPC to regulate this aspect of access to justice, and which is sorely needed. So we are extremely passionate that this regulations do get passed as soon as possible, because there is a desperate need for society and the community service, the way it is structured currently, and the pro bono services would assist the LPC to ensure that there is greater access to justice, which is one of our key objectives. If there's anything else that I could address and I haven't addressed it, please let me know.
Okay, Ms. Myberg, I think it's okay. Perhaps if you have additional information, especially from Mr. Nzuza, you could also provide us that information in writing. Let's allow that, given that
Sorry, Madam Chair, apologies for interrupting. I see Ms. Nzuza's hand is up. It's a Ms.
Ms. Nzuza. Ms. Charity. Okay. Ms. Nzuza, over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Sorry, my connection was not good. We do have a section in our offices which deals with candidates. So the same section of officials will be dealing with community service for candidates, and we will be able to monitor that through that section. But the whole community service, as the regulation says, that the certificates will be received by the LPC at the time of payment of subscriptions. We will be able to record that in our MMS system, which will then track that the either the candidate or the legal practitioner has done the legal the community service as required by the regulation. It must be noted that the reason why the number of hours is lower for candidates chair, it's because we want the candidate to concentrate on training to become either an attorney or an advocate, rather than spending more time assisting members of the public, because during that time they are still fresh from varsity and they don't have enough knowledge of the law, and we don't want to expose members of the public to candidates who are still in training, but it will give them just a glimpse of what to look forward to once they are admitted, Chair. So they will only do 8 hours, and we agree with that, so that they concentrate more on learning the skills that are required to be legal practitioners once they are admitted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nduza. My apologies for referring to you as Mr. earlier. I didn't hear you clearly.
No problem.
Okay, I see Honorable De Dovo, your hand is also up. Do you have a question?
Yeah, yes. Honorable Chair, my apologies. I've been battling with the network here because of load shedding. And I might have missed some issues as they were raised, but I have this question. Firstly, I think this issue of community service is very good in respect of the members of the LPC or those who must ultimately be registered as legal practitioners. But for me, there is a big problem. The problem is about these young people who battle to get law firms to allow them to serve pupillage or to be candidate attorneys up until they are registered. And most of them are young, black, and women. And this is a big problem. Now, my question is there a way that the LPC helps such people, especially those from historically disadvantaged communities? Because as I understand the regulations, one of the conditions is that you ought to serve community service, and therefore you can be admitted at the end of the day. Now, what kind of assistance can the LPC give, or what is it that you are doing to help such kind of people in order to facilitate their admission, whether to the bar or as attorneys, and ultimately register with you as the LPC? Now, with that, Chair, can I, if you allow me, ask a question which is not directly linked to the issue of community service and regulations as it is asked, but the question is ethics and discipline of members of the LPC, and this arises mostly as a result of missing funds from the Fidelity or what, or the trust accounts or of attorneys. And this is a concern that a lot of people have about the LPC in respect of facilitating cases, because cases, as I understand, they take long to be resolved, and at the expense of the people who lost the money as a result of the either negligence or misappropriation of funds by their legal representatives. And such cases, as I understand, they go to the LPC, but it takes a long time to resolve these particular issues. I want to check what is your comment on that, and what is the situation, and how can this be fast-tracked in such a way that this particular matter is resolved? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable De Dovo, for those two questions. Obviously, the other one might not be related, but it is somehow related to the regulations. But let me hand over then to yourself. I think, Ms. Nduza, your hand is up. Perhaps, are you going to respond?
Yes, I will try and respond to the questions. May I go ahead?
Yeah, please continue.
Thank you. Mr. Honorable Dodovo, we do have a challenge of candidates getting articles that we are currently having. It's an ongoing discussion in our Council and Professional Affairs Committee meetings. But what we have done in the past 3 years is that we have partnered with SACITA, and we are able to get some assistance in terms of payment of stipends for the candidates. What this has assisted so far is that it gives financial financial assistance to candidates while they are in training, but SACETA can only do so much, and we have not reached the correct number of assistance that that we can get for candidates. So we still do have a challenge, and it's a discussion that we have in professional affairs where we are trying to put in rules in place to look at coercing law firms or practicing legal practitioners to actually take on more candidates. The main issue with LPs taking on more candidates is the issue of paying them. So if we can find a solution to the payment of candidates, we are sure that we'll have more legal practitioners taking on more candidates, and more law firms also taking on more candidates. We are busy with a survey from candidate legal practitioners, and we will communicate the results of this survey, or it will actually direct counsel on how to move forward with the issue of assisting candidates to get assistance and also to be compensated financially during the 2 years that they are training. So it is a project that you are busy with, and it's not easy to deal with at the moment, because it has some financial implications, especially for legal practitioners and for law firms. On the second issue of complaints, Chair, the issue is that we have to follow the provisions of the Act when we get a complaint. But it must be noted, Chair, that we do have a provision in the Act which allows us, if we get a complaint regarding misappropriation of funds, that we can apply for an agent suspension of a legal practitioner, which is called a Section 43 suspension, while we do an investigation. Even though the investigation might take longer, we have that in place to ensure that the legal practitioner is not practicing during the time that we are investigating, and is not exposing members of the public to misappropriation of their funds. Now, when we are doing an investigation, we must get bank statements, we must get the complainants to send us affidavits, and we must also give a right of response to the legal practitioner during the investigation to ensure that the outcome on the investigation is the correct outcome. But what we make sure of is that when there is even a small chance that there is misappropriation of funds, we immediately apply for a Section 43 where we suspend the practitioner pending investigation. It is true that some investigations take long because some legal practitioners do not keep proper accounting records, so it becomes difficult for us to do the investigations and it takes longer. But eventually we do get the information that we need, and we then refer the matters to the investigating committee and subsequently to a disciplinary. And once the disciplinary finds that there is a misappropriation of funds, it then gets referred to the Fidelity Fund, which is a separate institution, which then will do its own checks and then eventually refund the monies to the legal practitioner, to the complainant or to the member of the public. It must be noted that some legal practitioners also are practicing without FFCs, and we try to suspend them as soon as we become aware that they are practicing without the FFCs. I trust that covers the questions from Honorable Dodov. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Ms. Mavis, did you want to add?
Yes, Madam, if I may, just our executive officer succinctly responded. I just would like to add to through you that this Legal Practice Council, as the former one as well, takes these matters, both the fact that there is a difficulty for students to access pupillage or articles, as well as in the extensive delay in matters being finalized when there are complaints. As has been mentioned by our executive officer, we are hampered to an extent by the fact that the process, the disciplinary process, is rather cumbersome. And when we do apply Section 43 for a suspension, we still have to go through the court process. We, this council, we in our second term of office, and this council, on the very first day of our first council meeting, was on the agenda, was dealing with the providing access to the profession for pupils and candidate attorneys. So I'm not really giving you an answer, but I can tell you that it is something we take seriously, something that we are aware of, and that we are continuously working on. And that is why our executive officer was able to give you an answer. We do have the CECITA program, but it's limited. I must also just say that you can only do community service as a candidate once you have a vocational training contract. And that is where it's challenging, as has been mentioned, that legal practitioners many times do not have the funds to pay for a candidate. And that is where the CETA project is coming in, and which is most handy. But it is nowhere enough, and it is something that we are continuously aware of and are trying to address.
Okay, thanks, Ms. Mavic. Honourable Dodo, your hand is up. Do you still want to follow up, or are you okay for now? Okay, maybe just in terms of the questions that were raised previously, perhaps maybe I'm not comfortable perhaps with a certain response, but just indicate that given that there is a need for access to justice, and I think there's also a backlog with regard to that, would the 8 hours of community service per year be sufficient to address this issue? And I understand that previously it was 40 hours per week. Perhaps if you could just elaborate on that. Over to you, Ms. Madel.
I see Ms. Nzuza's hand is up. Madam, she wants to respond, and then I will respond there afterwards.
Okay.
Honorable Chair, the 8 hours is only for candidate attorneys, which is a small fraction of the legal profession. You will note that we have over just close to 45,000 practicing legal practitioners, and their hours are 40 hours per annum. So we just want the small portion of the legal profession, which is the training candidates, to only do 8 hours, and then when they are admitted, they then revert to 40 hours per.
Right, great. I think I'm covered by that. Ms. Mavic, did you want to add?
No, I'm covered. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. No, thank you very much. I think we've come to the end of this engagement, but let me thank the department and the LPC for the information that was provided to the committee. And obviously, we will further deliberate on this matter. I think that these are both important regulations, and on members, just to remind yourself that our role as a committee is to approve or not to approve of these regulations, and thus far I haven't seen any notions of disapproval, but we will then take this process further in the next engagement of the meeting. Thank you very much, the chairperson and the team of the LPC and the department, Mr. Bayat. Ms. Mavic, your hand I see is still raised. Did you?
I do apologize. I just would like to stress the importance of getting these regulations approved. Society needs it, the profession needs it, and the longer the delay is, the longer society and the profession is suffering. And thank you very much for your time.
No, thanks for that, Ms. Margaret, but we will, to the best of our ability, try to ensure that we try and fast track this. I think you would note that in the NCOPDR, very differently structured from committees in the National Assembly, but we know what you said. Thank you very much. With that said, let me then...
Chairperson, you are muted.
Oh, thanks. All right. I'm not sure what I did. Okay, no, but I want to just thank and release members from the platform, from the department, in terms of their legal teams, as well as from the LPC. You're welcome to remain on the platform, but we're moving on to the next agenda item, which is with regard to the repeal of the Transparent Penal Code Bill. Our members will recall that, okay, the first item is with the consideration of the bill itself. Our members, we did engage with this bill, just to remind you. It's a Section 75 bill, and it seeks to repeal the Transcrian Penal Code 1983. It extends the application of certain laws to the area formerly known as the Republic of Transcai. It provides for transitional arrangements, and it provides for matters connected therewith. Members will recall that we put the bill out for public comment, but we did not receive any. We did deliberate on the bill, and members did not really have any issues on this bill. And if members, you will allow me then to table the bill without amendments for adoption. And if I can get a mover for the adoption of the bill without amendments and a seconder for that. Is there any member that would want to move for that? Honorable Maleka?
I move, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable
Bartlett. I move. Okay, thanks, Honorable Bartlett. Seconded. Okay, thank you, Honourable Bartlett. Are there any objections to this bill and or abstentions to adopting the bill without amendments? Okay, if none, then Honourable Members, if you then allow me then to table the committee report, Gershon, are you able to just reflect it? Okay, members, I think I've covered the background already in terms of the opening remarks I made earlier. What the bill seeks to do, the public participation process, question, please scroll down. The fact that we didn't receive any comments, and then we were briefed on the bill, etc. And then in terms of the consensus to the bill, our members, we accepted the bill. There were no objections or abstentions. And in terms of our recommendation in the report, we, having considered the repeal of the Transcrian Penal Code Bill, referred to the committee on the 28th of February 2023 and classified as Section 55, we recommend that the council pass the bill without proposed amendments. Well, members, that's the report of the committee. Are there any additions or amendments that members would like to make to the report? If there aren't any, if there's any member that would like to move for the adoption of the report and a seconder, members, the adoption of the report of the committee on the repeal of the Transcrian Penal Code Bill.
I move, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bartlett. Any seconder?
Chair, I'll second it.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bartlett. Are there any objections and abstentions? I will take it there are none. With that said, and Honourable Members, the report is also duly adopted. Honourable Members, we still have about 15 minutes before 12, and I'm proposing that we then move on to the next agenda item, which is two sets of minutes. The first set of minutes is dated the 15th of March, 2023. And in terms of that meeting, Honourable Members, we received a briefing by the Department of Justice on the written submissions to the Land Court Bill. And we also considered and adopted the report of the Joint Proactive Visit by the Select Committee to the Free State Province. I think in terms of attendance, or members that were not present in that meeting, Honorable Ndongeni, Honorable Mikolakis, and Honorable Dango were not present, but all other members were present. Honorable Members, you've received the minutes. I don't know if you have any additions that you would like to make to the minutes, and or correction. If you're happy with the minutes, if there's a member that would move for the adoption of the minutes. Honorable Maleka.
Thank you, Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes.
The Honorable Butler. A seconder.
I second, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Butler. The final set of minutes, Honorable Members, is with regard to minutes dated the 22nd of March, 2023. And in that meeting, once again, we received, well, in that meeting on members, we received a briefing on the repeal of the Transcrime Penal Code Bill by the Department of Justice. We also dealt with the tagging of the Land Court Bill, a briefing by the Parliamentary Legal Advisor. And we also deliberated on the Land Court Bill in that meeting. And just again, in terms of people who are not present in that meeting, it was Honorable Dango, Honorable Tetwa, Honorable Badenov, and Honorable Dudovu. I think that in several members, I want to, do you have any corrections and amendments that you would like to make to those minutes? And if not, if you're happy with them and you would want to propose for the adoption of those minutes? Honorable
Chair.
Tadwa.
Yes, Chair. I had just a network problem there, but it's not that I was totally out of that meeting.
Oh, okay, on that
on and
okay.
Off, yeah.
All right, no, it's fine. I think I shouldn't have correct. Yes. Okay, that being said, Tetra, is there any mover then to the adoption of that those minutes? Honorable Tetra?
I move, Chair.
Second, Chair.
Okay, no, thank you very much, on members. I think the minutes are duly adopted. That being said, all members, we've come to the end of this meeting. Thank you very much for your attendance and your participation and for remaining on the platform till this time. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.